Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking News for the week ending Friday the 19th of September 2014. First of all, an apology that the monthly magazine was not sent out last week due to technical problems. It's being dispatched with this copy of the news. The October edition should be on time. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Jean Gardner, Irene Dowding and Bill Argles. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noah Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are: record intake forces freshers out of city. We're still backing Silver Hill, says BID. And plans relieved for extra care housing. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley.
Record intake forces freshers out of city. A record intake of students at the University of Winchester this term has left more than 100 freshers unable to be housed in the city, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. 50 students have been told they will have to commute from halls in Southampton in their first year, paying £1,092 for an annual rail ticket to attend lectures. 73 others have been placed in the Holiday Inn at Maughan Hill, Premier Inn Eastleigh and Premier Inn West in Basingstoke, while the university tries to find them housing. The figure for students without accommodation has reached as high as 250, according to social media, although the university has declined to comment on the exact number. The crisis will renew concerns over the studentification of council estates, such as Stanmore, as many students reject beds miles from the city and turn to the private rental market. Sarah Newstead, 19, from Sandhurst, Berkshire, was due to start a law degree next week, September 22nd, but is reconsidering after being placed in Liberty Point, Southampton. Record intake forces freshers out of city. A record intake of students at the University of Winchester this term has left more than 100 freshers unable to be housed in the city, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. 50 students have been told they will have to commute from halls in Southampton in their first year, paying £1,092 for an annual rail ticket to attend lectures. 73 others have been placed in the Holiday Inn at Maughan Hill, Premier Inn Eastleigh and Premier Inn West in Basingstoke, while the university tries to find them housing. The figure for students without accommodation has reached as high as 250, according to social media, although the university has declined to comment on the exact number. The crisis will renew concerns over the studentification of council estates such as Stanmore, as many students reject beds miles from the city and turn to the private rental market. Sarah Newstead, 19, from Sandhurst, Berkshire, was due to start a law degree next week, September 22nd, but is reconsidering after being placed in Liberty Point, Southampton. She said, at the open day, they were going on about how they were all for the students, and it just seems they're not. How can you play with people's lives? You're just a name on a piece of paper, rather than a person. Sarah Hughes, 18, from Abingdon, Oxfordshire, who was also housed in Liberty Point, said, "I think they're just being greedy, taking on too many people. They know they don't have enough housing. I would rather have been turned down on results day and told they don't have enough." Derby Carter, president of Winchester Student Union, said, "I know many of them are very worried about the situation. We are working with the university to do what we can for them. Last year we had a high number of dropouts in the summer holidays. The university took the risk in assuming that would be the same again this year. The second accommodation crisis in 5 years comes after a housing shortage in 2009 forced the university to put 50 students up in a hotel near Southampton Airport. Some students were moved to a former homeless hostel and an old people's home, in which at least one elderly resident still lived before being permanently housed. University bosses had hoped that a 500-bed complex in Burma Road, opened last year, would reduce the influx of students into neighbourhoods like Winnall, Stanmore and Wick. But just a year later, the record intake of students, believed to be more than 2,000, has pushed late applicants into the private market. Paul Stevens of estate agent Goadsby said, "Their properties have been filled by first-year domestic students who turned down hotel rooms or Southampton halls." He said, "We've never seen first-year students going directly into houses. It's always second years. This is very peculiar." Stanmore Ward councillor Jamie Scott said investors looking to pack students into houses for profit are marginalising families in Winchester. He said, "Too many family homes are going over to student lets, and it's completely changing the dynamics of our community."
"We're still backing Silver Hill," says BID. The head of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, has restated his organisation's support for Silver Hill after dozens of his 800-strong membership wrote an open letter criticising the development. More than 40 retail businesses, including Cadogan & Co and D&G Hardware, say they disagree with BID's official positive stance on the £150 million project, which is set to cover about one quarter of the city's centre. In their letter to City Council leader Rob Humby, the shop owners set out a range of economic arguments against the scheme, which they said were backed by decades of experience operating in Winchester. But this week, BID Chief Executive Chris Turner was keen to stress the organisation, which works to enhance the retail experience of visitors to the city, remained firmly in favour of Silver Hill. "We recognise that aesthetic and design arguments are always very contentious and that much debate has taken place over the last few years, but planning permission has already been granted for this project and we are now looking to the city to fine-tune it to make it ready to start," he said. Mr Turner said two public meetings had been held with members, Henderson's and the City Council, one in spring 2012 and another in November 2013, to gauge the reaction to the Silver Hill proposals. Some 130 businesses took part in the two meetings, and although many businesses have very strong individual views on the Silver Hill development, the business case for the updated Silver Hill proposals is supported by the BID. "Our own analysis through our quarterly business barometer, our business visitor surveys, and the recent independent retail study all suggest that our independent retailers, a great strength of the city and still over 50% of our retailers, would be strengthened by an increase in affluent footfall that would spill over from an increased offering of new retailers rather than people choosing to go elsewhere." The ongoing controversy over the development has continued with the news that taxpayers could be forced to foot a bill of nearly £100,000 if a Winchester City Councillor pursues legal action against Silver Hill. Councillor Kim Gottlieb is seeking a judicial review into the council's handling of Henderson's plans to alter the development to building 177 homes with none of the initially planned social housing, bus station or youth facilities, and an increase in shop space from 10,284 square metres to 14,029 square metres, including a small department store.
And here we have plans revealed for extra care housing. Controversial plans to build housing for the elderly on a Winchester City Centre car park have been revealed. Civic chiefs held an exhibition on Monday of plans to create an extra care facility on the Chesil Street open-air car park. The scheme has angered some local people who say it will only add to the parking problems in the area. The exhibition said no other sites are available and detailed discounted sites, including Avalon House, the Cattle Market car park, Middle Brook Street car park and St Peter's car park. It also said, to mitigate the loss of existing parking, there will be new parking provided for residents. There is an alternative parking in the underused Chesil Street multi-storey, which is being improved. By 2030, the number of people aged 75 and over in Hampshire is set to increase by 85%. There are 138 people registered on the Hampshire Home Choice Housing Register for Winchester District who need sheltered or extra care housing. Councillor Ian Tate of Winchester City Council said he supports the scheme. It's just getting the balance right between meeting some of the needs of residents and local businesses' parking requirements and providing the extra care housing, which is something that the city needs, he said. However, Liz Cooper, chairman of the St Giles Hill Residents Association, said she thinks the plans are not in keeping with the surrounding area. She said, "I'm very supportive of building a special care unit for the elderly, but I think that I question whether this is the right location for such a building. The pavement is very narrow and it is a busy road. I think it is overdevelopment of a relatively small site with bulky buildings." And there is a diagram of the proposed new buildings with the little tiny cottages along Chesil Street, instead of looking over the trees of the open-air car park, looking onto a series of very large square blocks that would be towering quite high above their little cottages.
That concludes the headlines. Now we have the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Arnold, Montague John Arnold, at Queen Alexandra Hospital, aged 87. Brewer, Rosemary Brewer, aged 84. Chalkley, Alan Kenneth Chalkley, at Phyllis Tucker, aged 66. Colson, Melvin Nicholas Colson, unexpectedly at home, aged 60. Furs, Victor Phillips Furs, peacefully. Marchant, Francis Eileen Marchant, peacefully, aged 78. Neagle, Gordon Neagle, at Yeovil District Hospital, aged 67. Pike, Frank Pike, aged 83. White, Pamela Joan White, peacefully. And Wood, Ray Wood, peacefully, aged 85. Christian Comment this week is read by Jane. Thank you, Jane.
Christian Comment is "A United Kingdom Must Be Chosen." Preparations are well underway for this year's Lovell Lecture at the Cathedral. The lecture, sponsored by a former High Sheriff of Hampshire, Alan Lovell, helps people of different faiths come together to appreciate each other's traditions and beliefs better. Over the years, we have had Jewish, Sikh, Sufi and Muslim speakers, but this year, the Bishop of Southampton will speak from a Christian perspective about how Christianity fits into the global picture. The worry about these friendly and sincere interfaith events is that they barely touch the problems confronting us on the news. Surely the Prime Minister is right to say that the beheading of the English aid worker was not performed in the name of any religion, but by a group who are the embodiment of evil. Their reasoning, such as it is that their actions will sway public opinion against military intervention, or perhaps will cause troops rather than drones to be deployed. There seems to be a yawning gap between the barbarity in Iraq and Syria and the small steps that we can take to establish peaceful dialogue locally. But there is at least some connection. It's a connection that the terrorists seek to exploit when they use a local act to set off a chain reaction for their own cause. Meeting together in Winchester to come to a closer understanding of our different faiths is actually a political act. It says that while we worship God in different ways, we acknowledge a wider and shared framework of values and practices which we must inhabit together. We do not wish that framework to be governed to the benefit of some and the exclusion of others. We want it instead to be the result of various voices coming together, seeking a common good. The faith communities of the UK would agree that this good can't be discovered without taking the perspectives of religion into account, or indeed the perspectives of those who claim no faith. This does not mean Christians giving up on their traditions, values, or even their mission, but it does mean giving up on an ideology of domination. It strikes me that a religion whose leader was crucified by the power of the state can give its hearty yes to a kingdom where others have their say and no one is coerced into any form of religious belief. A united kingdom must be chosen. And that was from Roland Ream of the Cathedral.
Now we move on to letters to the editor. The first letter is led by Shirley. Thank you, Shirley.
This one from Michael Weller is headed, "When was Victorian building delisted?" Sir, if the development on Silver Hill goes ahead, a Victorian building, now King's Walk Antiques Market, will be pulled down. Can Winchester City Council please tell me when the building was delisted and why? Michael Weller, address supplied.
Pip Billington complains of wasted years over leisure centre delay. Sir, our council leaders need to get off their backsides. All this prevaricating over the leisure centre means wasted years, particularly for the young people of our city. Bar End is the obvious solution to the problem. It is accessible by bus from the city centre and by car from anywhere. It is next to the city park and ride. It already houses our fabulous world-class athletics facility. Visit any time of the day or evening and you'll see both able-bodied and disabled athletes training, many of whom are competing on the international stage. If we built a 50-metre pool for our swimmers for the talent coming through clubs like Winchester Penguins, it would draw people from miles. At the moment, the nearest 50-metre pool is Portsmouth or the Army one at Aldermaston, rarely available. Winchester is already a centre of excellence in education. We are home to the most outstanding primary, secondary and sixth form education in the country. We are home to leading private schools. We have a growing university with an international reputation for teacher training. We are a centre for athletic excellence. Why not extend that to swimming and all the other sports a vibrant recreation centre can offer? Let's just get on with it. Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
This letter is from Brian Laming and is about concerns over future for RHCH. Sir, I have become increasingly concerned about the future of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital since Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust briefed Winchester City councillors on their proposal to build a new acute patient and trauma centre at Micheldever. I understand they will also be consulting on plans to remove obstetric care from RHCH and downgrade A&E to a minor injuries unit. In my ward, I have spoken to many residents who either work at or are associated with the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and they have expressed concerns about its future. Their perception is that services and equipment has been moved to Basingstoke and that maintenance of the fabric of the hospital is suffering. I have been told that the roof of the maternity building leaks so badly that when it rains, midwives have to run around putting buckets out to catch the water. I was also very concerned to hear that staff morale has been affected by the uncertainty and that they do not feel they have been properly consulted about the possible changes. Through this letter, I am hoping to hear the views of more residents and staff regarding the Trust's proposals. Although I accept that the NHS will have to change in order to meet the challenges of the future, the fact that we live in a growing city must be acknowledged. Winchester has been fortunate to have an excellent hospital for hundreds of years. It has a reputation for medical and nursing excellence, and it has supported the community well. I would like to see it being able to continue to do that for many years to come. And that was from Brian Laming, who is the city councillor for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery.
They should be custodians of open spaces, says Mrs. Craig. Sir, with the drive to improve health, encourage communities, and the requirement to provide open spaces, you would think the councils would be careful custodians, safeguarding your local playing fields rather than profiting from building on them. Sadly, not. Open spaces like playing fields are specifically offered special consideration against development under the National Planning Policy Framework. Winchester has insufficient play areas and open spaces, as shown in the City Council's own reports, with a 77% deficit. The ward, including Week, has a shortfall of over 12 acres, making it the second most deprived area for open spaces in Winchester. Yet the council pursues developing the playing field at Westmond Road for housing, granting themselves permission, subject to conditions, which will make Week's open space provision worse. This is despite 240 petitioners and 39 written objections against the loss of the park. The local community action plan identified Barton Farm, only 450 yards away, as meeting the local housing need. The local need for homes will be met multiple times with Barton Farm's 800 affordable homes, so there is no need to build on the park. There is irony in reading about the councillors requiring amenities at the Barton Farm development whilst building on the playing field for the neighbouring residents. This is not an isolated case. There are over 20 sites, including green open spaces and at least one playing field in Winchester, marked for housing in the Winchester District Strategic Housing Land Availability Assessment. This means losing amenities serving our local communities and more urban sprawl. The mitigation proposed so far to replace Westmond Road Park falls short of the required equal or better quantity and quality of replacement open space in a suitable location. Improving the community centre would be welcome, but it's not a replacement for open space as it already exists. So the local community will be interested in seeing how the council will publicly consult and achieve the same quantity of replacement provision of open space in the eastern side of Week. That was from Mrs. Craig of Stony Lane, Winchester.
Here's a letter asking for a holistic approach to the one-way system. Sir, Councillor Mike Southgate has suggested a review of the one-way system in the Chronicle September the 4th. One-way systems were introduced in the 60s and 70s when improving vehicle speed and increasing traffic capacity were considered to be key requirements. Now that we have a city centre 20-mile-an-hour zone, improving vehicle speed is no longer a requirement. And now that traffic volumes in the city centre have stabilised, increasing capacity is also no longer a requirement. So we're left with the negatives of the one-way system. These negatives are a deterrence to walking and cycling, longer journeys for all vehicles, including buses, as well as air pollution and traffic-affected shopping and visitor environment on St George's and Jury Streets. Now would be a good time to take a holistic approach to reviewing the one-way system. This approach would aim to improve walking, cycling and bus access, while improving access to car parking for shoppers, improved management of deliveries and the deterring of through traffic in the city centre. It is important that a combined transport, parking and deliveries plan for the city centre based on this review would be implemented jointly by the city and county councils. This plan should be implemented before Barton Farm residents become accustomed to using the city centre as a through route to the M3. Michael Slynn, Abbey Road, Winchester.
And this letter from M. Simmons is headed, "Call this a first-class service." "Sir, your recent correspondent, who had no mail, might be interested in a notice recently fixed to our local collection box, where it seems the service is getting better, but for whom, I don't know. I quote, 'Change to last collection time. In order to improve efficiency, we're reviewing our mail collection arrangements and revising collection times. From September the 15th, 2014, the final collection from this postbox will be made no earlier than 9 a.m. Monday to Friday and 7 a.m. on Saturdays. The latest collection time for this area is shown on the postbox. Can we assume the collection person is in the area any time between the earliest and latest stated times for collections? Then along comes Joe Soap, who posts his first-class letter before the stated last time, expecting next-day delivery, but this will not happen. Therefore, a first-class system is no longer required. What sort of efficiency is that? Once upon a time, the next collection tab stating time and day were changed on every collection and you knew where you were." And that was from M. Simmons, Roselands Close, Fair Oak.
And this is from Rosemary and Anthony Chambers. Headed, "Sad that people should complain. Sir, we were horrified to hear of the complaints from locals over party noise from MP George Hollingberry's home on Saturday, September the 6th. We live in one of the closest houses to the venue and heard virtually nothing after midnight. How sad that neighbours should resent the enjoyment of young people, and we just wonder if some of those who complained could even remember what it was like to be 21, or perhaps to have had children or grandchildren of that age. Why was there so much public interest? Was there some political motivation? The hosts of the dance, who were also celebrating their 50th birthdays, have probably done more good in Alresford than the rest of us, supporting charities and opening their lovely house for many good causes. If the dance had been for the Red Cross or youth options, would the complaints have been so vociferous and unkind? They warned many locals in advance and took measures to stifle the noise as well as they could. Compared with the noise that sometimes emanates on Saturday evenings from local pubs, to which we have no objection, and of course the ongoing rumbling of lorries through our beautiful town, last week's noise was negligible. Rosemary and Anthony Chambers, The Soak, Alresford."
And here's a letter from Richard Parfitt expressing joy at returning students to the city. "Sir, well, here we go again. Students are coming back and all the late night music will start, along with them blocking your drive because they're too lazy to walk. What makes things worse is they don't pay council tax. The people that rent out these houses should pay a business tax. Their bins are left out most of the time, along with black bags. And when they cut the hedges, they just leave it on the ground. They don't even clean it up. You can spot a house of multiple occupation because the gardens are such a mess. What does the council do? Nothing. The residents, what's left of them, pay our taxes, and we should be getting this sorted out. It's funny, the government says that there should not be more than 20% of houses of multiple occupation in the street. What a joke! The council should also go round and do spot checks on the houses of multiple occupation to make sure that the number of students that are living in these houses are right and not more than there should be. Richard Parfitt, Walpole Road, Stanmore.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Jane.
And we have two little items from 200 years ago, from September the 19th, 1814. Curious scenes seen at depot. A curious scene was yesterday displayed in a field near the York depot at Chelsea. Nearly 3,000 soldiers, principally foreigners, wounded in the British service, mustered without arms, legs, etc., for inspection, previous to passing their examination before the board at Chelsea Hospital. The maimed and unfortunate situation of these warriors occasioned many painful sensations to the spectators. One poor fellow, who had the misfortune to be blown up in a storming party, is so much disfigured by gunpowder as to have the appearance of an African. And also, hopefully from 200 years ago, a Gothenburg mail has arrived containing the following proclamation of the Crown Prince to the Norwegians. Warriors of Norway, the war which you commenced against Sweden had neither object nor legitimate cause. It is by Charles XIII and his successors that the right of governing Norway, according to the laws made by the people themselves, belongs. The Swedish soldier has not entered your territory as an enemy. He wishes for the happiness of the ancient kingdom of Norway, and the most sincere and the most advantageous wish which he can form for you is that you may be united to the ancient kingdom of Sweden.
And this one from 100 years ago, dated September 19th, 1914. And there are two parts to this. Among battle stories current in Paris is one that during a charge by the 12th Lancers and the Scots Greys, a body of German infantry threw down their rifles and held up their hands. The British cavalry were carried beyond the German lines, but pulled up as soon as possible. No sooner had they passed than the Germans picked up their rifles and fired at the backs of the British, who turned and hacked the traitors to pieces. Belgian soldiers in Winchester. Much interest was taken in two young Belgian soldiers who arrived in Winchester in the early part of the week, having become cut off from the main body of the army and made for England as the best way of getting back to Belgium. Their names were Robert Denisti, aged 19, of the artillery, and Marcel Oden, aged 22, of the 1st Lancers. They were intelligent, pleasant young fellows, and Denisti was able to speak very good English. Denisti stated that Namur took 3 days to fall. The Germans brought up immense guns, drawn by 32 and 36 horses, and some of the projectiles fired weighed 600 pounds.
Two items from 50 years ago, September the 19th, 1964. One of them is headlined Swine Fever Restrictions. Swine fever restrictions, which have been in force in Wiltshire, were extended to cover the whole of Hampshire as from midnight on Wednesday. The landing place at the port of Southampton is the only exception from the restricted area. The reason given by the Ministry of Agriculture, who have imposed the restriction, is to reduce the risk of spread of the infection, and the holding of store markets and exhibitions of pigs within the county is completely banned. And the second item, intruders who broke into the Old George public house at the square, Fair Oak, on Sunday morning, drank milk and orange juice before leaving. Stocks of liquor were left untouched. Entry was gained through a window at the front of the premises, and the raiders left by unlocking a rear door. Property and cash to the total value of £15.10.6 was taken. This includes £6.05 in silver and copper coins, 26 cigars, 300 cigarettes, and about 30 bars of chocolate, a box of chocolate, and an open razor.
And from 25 years ago, we have two items. September the 22nd, 1989. Housing list grows in Winchester. The lack of housing for people in Winchester, the council's waiting list is now 1,750, was back on the agenda this week as councillors debated what to do with land it owns in the city centre. Mr John Cloyne made a strong plea that land at Cossack Lane should be used for this purpose. "We have virtually run out of land for new building," Mr Cloyne pointed out. "The housing waiting list is not going to go away, and somehow we have to find housing for people who can't afford Winchester house prices." And again, "Winchester's beleaguered River Park Leisure Centre finally seems close to resolving all its problems. The long list of faults is dwindling and attendance figures are up by more than 20%. We're not through with the difficulties yet, but there's a fair bit of light at the end of the tunnel," said Leisure Centre manager Mr Bill Ronan. "The computer controlling the electrical, mechanical and engineering systems has been on trial to see if it's man enough to run them. This was the first time since the complex opened last October that all the systems have worked together."
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Shirley and will be followed by first person read by Noel. Thank you, Shirley.
This is headed, "University must get the numbers right." "It's not the start students will have expected as they embark on their studies away from home for the first time at university. It's not the start the University of Winchester would have wanted either. But more than 100 freshers will be living up to 20 miles away from the campus and city they signed up to at the start of this term. The news will have put extra strain on those young people unable to be housed close to their place of study, not to mention the cost of travelling to and from the university. Many will be housed in hotels in Southampton, Basingstoke and Eastleigh, while the university tries to find them housing. The crisis will also renew concerns over the studentification of council estates like Stanmore, as many students reject beds miles from the city and turn to the private rental sector. The university says there has been an unprecedented demand for housing this year and has met its guarantee to provide centrally managed housing to first-year students who applied as their firm choice before June. That may be so, but the university cannot afford for its reputation to be tarnished in this way. It must ensure this doesn't become a regular occurrence as its popularity grows.
First person this week is by Judith Hennigan, and it's headlined, "Busy Being Fine, Hope You Are Too." "Last week I called a friend to ask a favour. I needed a lift for my daughter as I was working late. 'How are you?' she asked, once the main reason for calling was settled. 'Busy,' I replied with a sigh. 'Really busy.' I then proceeded to reel off a list of tasks I'd been set and pressing objectives I'd so far failed to achieve. I didn't particularly enjoy reflecting on this conversation once we'd said our goodbyes, and the reason for my dismay was that these are words I seem to speak all the time, every day. It's my default response. I'm always busy. Or if you're especially lucky, very busy. The same is true, it seems, for quite a few friends and acquaintances. We run around like the proverbial headless chicken, up to our ears, chasing our tails, along with every other cliché I can churn out at speed, because I'm obviously far too busy to think of anything original. But the problem with 'I'm busy' is the message it conveys to those who receive it. Perhaps it's like putting a hand up in front of the person who has so kindly asked the question in order to head off any open communication. 'I'm busier than you,' says the hand. Or worse, 'I'm too busy for you.' So, with about 2 minutes to spare in my oh-so-busy schedule of all things overwhelmingly every day, I've decided to work on some alternatives. But what to say instead? I once knew an elderly man who replied brimful of sherbet every single time anyone inquired after his well-being. This always made me smile, but I'm not sure I could carry it off with such style. Besides, it did seem require some suspension of disbelief. Perhaps I should try being more vague. I could look into the middle distance and say, oh, you know. But those narcissistic tendencies don't need the extra encouragement. Of course, I could actually tell the truth, which right now would be along the lines of, well, seeing as you've asked, I'm currently wishing the washing machine would stop making such a racket because I'm trying to write an article, but I'm worried the repetitive knocking sound might in fact indicate the whereabouts of my USB dongle thingy, in which case I'm going to be extremely busy and in a bit of a panic. However, the option I like best is, of course, the simplest of all. Time to defer to an old but forgiving favourite that beckons like the friend who has asked the question in the first place. I'm fine, I could say. How are you? On a different note, a cheer for the runaway success of the inaugural Winchester Poetry Festival last weekend. Wonderful to hear such provocative and enriching poetry in the Discovery Centre and venues around the city. As my English teacher used to say, words alive.
Belgorum's alternative look at the news this week is two items, the first of which is headed Snap the Downs Hidden Gems and Win Top Prizes. The annual South Downs Photography Competition has been launched. Budding photographers will have the chance to earn themselves top prizes with snaps of the national park as they unveil their hidden gems, the theme for this year. Nick Heesman, Western Area Manager for the South Downs National Park Authority and competition judge, said, "The South Downs is full of countless hidden gems waiting to be discovered. So we're hoping to see amazing photographs that entice people to look beyond the national park's more obvious attractions. Can you capture the subtle charms of the quiet valleys where others rarely tread? The secret meadows, those hidden pub gardens." The first prize for photos is £250, the second £150, and the third prize is £50. The competition closes at midday on Tuesday, the October the 15th. And the second item is headed, "Loss of view should not be seen as beneficial." No crystal clear English awards for a report looking at the impact of the Silver Hill development on key views in Winchester. London-based Richard Coleman City Designer was commissioned by developer Henderson to assess the impact of the buildings up to seven stories high on 19 views from St Catherine's Hill to the Guildhall. Leading architects have argued the scheme will ruin the city. But the report, submitted as part of a revised planning application, concluded the effect was mostly neutral or even beneficial. In only one case was it judged adverse. But the urban designer's conclusion that obscuring views of the cathedral from Park Avenue was beneficial had Belgorum reaching for the smelling salts. The report argued the new development was preferable because demolishing Friars Gate car park, together with the quality of architecture, outweighs marginal loss of visible nave, leading to an overall benefit. Tell that to locals who cherish the view of their cathedral. This week's announcements begin with What's On. Here are several events in and around Winchester. On Monday the 22nd of September and every Monday from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. and 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. you can take part in Singing for Wellbeing at the United Church, Jury Street, Winchester. This activity is for the over 60s, particularly those with memory or other long-term health issues. On Wednesday the 24th of September, there's a talk entitled High and Low Winchester Characters at Abbey House at 10:30 a.m. The event is in aid of the Mayor's Charities and the cost is £8, including coffee. Check for availability on 01962 852 709. That's 01962 852 709. On Thursday the 25th of September at the Hampshire Record Office, the free lunchtime talk is by the Hyde 900 Group, starting at 1:15 p.m. and is entitled In Search of Alfred the Great. On Saturday the 27th of September at Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m. there's a concert by the Cambridge Taverner Choir entitled A Rose Without a Thorn. The box office for that event is 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. The Winchester Art Club annual exhibition is at the Discovery Centre in Jury Street until October the 5th. And looking further ahead, the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra concert in Winchester Cathedral on Saturday, 18th of October, is For the Fallen and includes works by Vaughan Williams, Butterworth, Elgar, Finzi and Coles. Further information and box office for that event is 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Lighting Up Time ends today, Friday, the 19th of September, at 6:46 a.m. and begins at 7:11 p.m.